This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast, your audio source for all things Michigan football, basketball, and recruiting. I'm your host, Zach Shaw. Steve Lorenz is here with me talking Michigan's 41-17 win over Penn State, another top 10 win, another home blowout of the Nittany Lions and the Wolverines. I think this is their best game of the year. I think this was better than their prior Big Ten wins, even though a couple of them were on the road. I think this was a true statement, a statement win for Michigan, continuing, I guess, a trend of the last 2 years. They're now 19-2 in the last two seasons. They have a lot of double-digit wins, a lot of road wins. A lot of ranked wins are starting to add up in those in that 2 year stretch. Just more physicality, more dominance. We'll talk about both sides of the ball. But Steve, we have to start with this rushing attack. 418 yards rushing. And I had kind of teased before the game, I thought Penn State's rushing defense or run defense was a little untested, had not really faced anybody, had not faced anyone nearly as physical as Michigan. In fact, that was one of my keys, was just run physical because you probably will be able to. I did not see 418 yards coming. I think Blake Corum looked a lot like what we've seen from Blake Corum, but I thought something big was Donovan Edwards kind of having a career game, career high in rushing yards. You know, got a few breakaway plays as well, really started to look like, I guess, what we expected Donovan Edwards to look like this season, you know, with the injury, working his way back from the injury. There were a few. He started out a little quieter than expected this season. I don't think anyone expected Blake Corum to have 30 carries, 29 carries, 25 carries, 25 carries. And so now Edwards is starting to step in and emerge as maybe not a 1B, but a very high level number two running back for the Wolverines. I thought that was very important. And I thought the offensive line looked like the best offensive line in the country. You know, they talked about it before the season. They felt like this year's offensive line would be better. It did not look the part in September. It started to see progress in October against Iowa and Indiana. But then I think this Penn State game really puts Michigan in that Joe Moore Award driver's seat. I don't watch every game in the country, but you know, the games that I've peeked at, the holes Michigan was creating on Saturday against a defense that maybe is a little small up front, but they're not bad. They're an athletic secondary. They have athletic linebackers. I think they're going to stop other rushing attacks this season. But the holes Michigan were creating, you know, Steve, you and I were in the press box kind of joking, like, we probably could have gotten 3 yards out of that one. Like, you know, those are red zone carries too. And so I mean, this is a rushing attack that Michigan's going to be able to lean on all season, you know, as they make a college football playoff push, as they try to capture a second straight Big Ten title. You know, and I thought the quote that J.J. McCarthy had after the game where he said, you know, teams winning national championships are not air raid offenses. Like, you have to dominate in the trenches. You have to be a physical offense. You don't have to be run first, thinking about Ohio State, Alabama, but you do have to have a very serviceable and dominant rushing attack when you need it, because ultimately that's how you beat those teams too. Very rarely do those teams win, even though the receivers and the quarterback get all the awards and the draft picks and all the attention. They also dominate up front, and Michigan really dominates up front. I came away very impressed with the offensive line, very impressed with the rushing attack. And ultimately it's one of those games that Michigan was so good, Penn State has to rethink everything now. You know, this was a true obliteration of Penn State's defense. Don't think the cornerbacks necessarily had bad games for the Nittany Lions, but everyone else did. And ultimately, Michigan just punched Penn State in the mouth again and again and again. And I think the score could have been even more lopsided. Steve, what were your kind of main takeaways from Michigan's offensive performance Saturday?
Well, I'm kicking myself for not picking a bigger, like more of a blowout, because you could kind of foresee this a little bit, I think. Again, not necessarily the way it happened, but for whatever reason, Michigan always seems to win the trench battle against Penn State on both sides of the football. They did that again yesterday. Talk about Donovan Edwards. I kind of wondering if we just kind of watched his true breakout game develop throughout the course of yesterday's game. Because you remember early, he had a few carries. I think he missed a couple holes, looked a little indecisive, and then I don't know what happened. But all of a sudden, you know, he was finding seams. And, you know, just like Corum, he's different than Corum, not as slippery, but another guy that when he gets to the second level, very difficult to contain, very difficult to stop. So, you know, because really to this point in his career, his biggest plays have really almost been in the passing game. catching the ball, but even the throw against Iowa. I mean, you know, he's had some good ball. He's had some good games rushing the football, but not like on the big stage necessarily. So I think his game, you know, Blake Corum, I think at this point we can just say Blake, he's kind of doing almost what we expect him to do to an extent. But with Edward, I think this was a much more significant game for Michigan down the road because of Edward's ability between the tackles and in the running game, because we know what he can do in the passing game. If these guys, if both of them become capable assets protecting the quarterback in the passing game, then I really think Michigan could have both of these guys on the field on a more consistent basis than they already do, you know? And so we've talked a little bit about how dangerous Edwards is for defenses. They split him out. They ran him out of the backfield, that little release play where he was wide open. Just, you know, a lot of different ways they can utilize him. But yesterday was really huge because he had his best game as like an actual running back. So, and looked good doing it. Yeah, I mean, Michigan's offensive line looked excellent. It's always impressive when you do things to teams that you're not really supposed to do, you know. But I credit to you for the being able to kind of at least illustrate it was possible for Michigan to have some rushing success in this game. Because I think most people thought if Michigan's going to win this game, it's going to be on McCarthy's arm. I think we compared it to the Ohio State game a little bit last year, where the stats were good, but there were still some question marks if you dug a little bit into it. I mean, Michigan really made those question marks huge for Penn State. So, yeah, I mean, can't be much more impressed with it. It's not that it could have easily been a bigger blow. It really should have been. Three field goals inside the 10-yard line, fluke interception return for a touchdown for Penn State. One, maybe, I guess the pass down the field was a big play, but like really basically two big offensive plays was all Penn State had yesterday. So really just the type of performance you want going into a bye week with Michigan State coming to town the week after. I mean, this Michigan's got to be feeling really good where they stand, you know, heading into get, I think it's the point. Sometimes a bye week's always good, but like they'll really get, these guys will be rested up. Particularly a guy like Corum, he had 20 carries in the first half. They were able to lower the workload a little bit in the second when Edwards sort of took over. But still, I mean, you know, Corum's had taken a lot of carries, a lot of hits so far this year. I think the bye week will be huge for him. But I think Michigan leaves the field yesterday with just as much confidence as they possibly could on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, they do. And we can switch over to the defensive side. I mean, you kind of illustrated it. There were two plays Penn State had that totaled 110 yards. The other 49 plays that the Nittany Lions ran went for 157 yards. I mean, that's it. That's 3 yards a play. That's nothing. They had 10 first downs the entire game on 9 drives. I mean, that's almost averaging, you know, a very quick drive where you punt. Penn State, I thought really their run game was completely wiped out. I know it's not like their staple, but they've put up good rushing numbers this year. you know, thinking about how Penn State beat Auburn, you know, how Penn State beat Northwestern, and really, I mean, it was a complimentary part of their game in their win over Purdue. But Nick Singleton and Ka'Tron Allen combined for 35 yards on 12 carries. They were trailing, so it's not like they were trying to run a ton, but really just couldn't do anything in the run game. And then in the pass game, I thought they, you know, there were, I guess, a couple plays. I don't think that Michigan got quite as many sacks as it could have. I thought Sean Clifford did a really nice job. We were kind of talking about it. Like he's almost like an NFL veteran, where if he sees two rushers, you know, he just puts the ball on the ground right away. He just throws it away right away. He doesn't even try to make something happen. That's what you get when you've played in front of Penn State's offensive line for a few years, I guess. You know, but it did help avoid sacks and you know, maybe some true momentum changing plays. But Penn State didn't really do a ton in the passing game either. And I think the two players that I kind of circled as the most dangerous for Michigan were Parker Washington, Brenton Strange. They combined for 4 catches, 42 yards on 9 targets. I mean, that's, can't do a ton better than that. Not with how much Penn State was throwing the ball. So really came away impressed with the defense. Thought Mike Sainristil still continues to look like such an X factor for this defense. I mean, this was someone who definitely was valuable and valued entering the season. But, you know, I really was impressed. It almost seemed like he was the guy that was able to stop Michigan from getting caught out of position or in a bad formation. There was really just one time pre-snap where I was like, oh, I think Michigan's in bad positioning here. Or I think Penn State's kind of got the matchup advantage here. And it was that 48-yard completion. You know, because Penn State likes to, you know, put guys in motion, do different formations. You know, they like to substitute a lot. Try to do the, you know, the classic like Saquon Barkley on Mike McCray kind of situation where Michigan misses on one substitution or does something wrong and suddenly Penn State goes off for a 40-yard play. Really only happened once in the passing game. And I think Mike Sainristil still had a lot to do with that. You know, he was someone that I think he was just pretty much on Washington all game. You know, wherever Washington went, he went too. And I thought he did a really nice job in coverage, but also continuing to see him providing support near the line of scrimmage in the run game too. So he was someone that really, really jumped out to me. Steve, what are some of your biggest takeaways from Michigan's defense?
I think I wrote after the game, and I think the defensive front is particularly where it stands out. Is, you know, we talk about Michigan's been really good in the second half this year, and it's really starting to feel like the depth up front is starting to kind of really shine. But Taylor Upshaw had one of his best games of his Michigan career yesterday. It's just that they have a constant rotation of guys coming in. We talk a lot about, you know, that they have enough different types of guys to create different mismatches and really almost kind of dictate the game. You know, normally offense wants to kind of try to dictate, you know, the defense has to react. I think a couple plays, you know, that third down play where Michigan was totally off the line on the left-hand side, had Harrell way off on the edge. That's Michigan dictating, you know, that to me, that was at that point, I think this game's over. I mean, Michigan is basically daring Penn State to attack that right hand, that right side. It just felt like Michigan's defense yesterday was in control throughout. But yeah, I think it's that depth and they didn't, I think I saw there was a couple people complaining that Michigan wasn't getting home enough. And I even maybe mentioned it during the game, but on rewatch, I think Michigan definitely did enough to get Penn State's quarterbacks uncomfortable in the pocket. A lot of poor throws, particularly from Clifford. I don't know, Aller had a couple, but he wasn't in that long. You know, just again, really just kind of a dominant performance. The statistics for Michigan defensively are really starting to look more and more impressive, you know, and really, I think statistically so far better than last year's defense was at this time. So, yeah, I mean, it really is like pick your poison. I think yesterday during the game, we're in the box talking about, you know, we really hadn't seen a ton of RJ Moten. And then he comes in, basically sheds an offensive lineman and gets a sack. I mean, it's just like, there's so many guys that seem to kind of step up or are making plays. Mike Sainer still is another one. I think we pointed out a couple times during the game yesterday. Excellent defense on that fourth down. You know, basically forcing the quarterback to have to make the perfect pass in that situation. You know, and then Will Johnson comes in when Jamon Green was down for a little bit. I think that hit is what put Clifford out of the game. I think we'd have to go back and look, but I think it was that
play. I'm pretty sure it was.
Right? Yeah. So there's so many different guys that have kind of contributed so far this year for Michigan. And that is only a good thing as the season continues, because like I said, particularly up front, you know, a guy like Taylor Upshaw stepping up and having such a huge game in the fourth quarter yesterday, I think is huge, because we're getting the point now where we're talking about Okie. Mike Morris is kind of that guy. I think we can just count on playing a really good game every week in and week out. I think he's kind of figured it out. But seeing other vets and Derek Moore's maturation continues. I mean, he got a lot of big time snaps yesterday. So, and then the other thing too, you know, it is going to be fascinating to see if teams are going to be successfully able to run the football with Smith and Jenkins in the middle, because once again, they were both dominant in the middle. You know, I think between Smith, Jenkins, and Harrell, you have three, I don't know if elite might be going too far for all three of them, but really close. Harrell's another guy, was kind of a really sort of an edge run defender specialist. But he's developed more of an all-around game too, you know, and now Michigan can kind of keep him out on the field a little bit more than they maybe normally would have. So yeah, it is. It's pick your poison right now. Smith did a great job in the pass rush aspect yesterday too. Had a couple nice pressures, you know, caused some problems. So yeah, overall, I mean, yeah, both sides of the ball were really clicking yesterday, really for four quarters. I know they were down, but you know, defense obviously didn't give up the pick six, and you know, you had that one broken play pretty much that was what 80% of Penn State's offense in the first half was that one run, you know? So
yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. So just can't help but be really impressed with not just the overall performance as a unit, but just that it's not one or two guys that are like making every big play. It's a wide array of players who are, you know, making an impact.
Yeah, I really agree. I think it's natural to overlook when defensive tackles do well, because it never or rarely looks amazing in the box score. But yeah, Mazi Smith, Chris Jenkins continuing to be just ultimate run stoppers, among the best in the Big Ten at their position and stopping the run. And now Michigan is number six in the country in run defense. I predicted before the season they would finish top five. And so they're starting to get up there. And based on who they're playing in the next few weeks, I think they'll end up being ranked even higher. Now, I kind of agree, even if a team is run heavy, like thinking like an Illinois or an Ohio State, they're not going to be able to have a comfortable day rushing the ball, particularly against those two, the way Junior Colson attacks the run game, the way the defensive backs are. I think Michigan's got among the better run-stopping defensive backs in the country. We're going to hit a quick break, talk, and then on the other side, we'll talk a little bit about what this all means, kind of the big picture impact of such a dominant top 10 win. You're listening to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
CBS Friday, TV's hottest show is Fire Country.
I'm not a hero.
I'm in orange for a reason.
They're taking 12 months off your sentence. You're free.
Lady.
With a special epic season finale.
Now that I'm out, I need something to get me up in the morning.
You are a firefighter.
Used to be.
That will be unforgettable.
In the name of your life's happiness, go get your girl.
She's getting married tomorrow.
Says, when do you let anything get in the way of what you want?
The Fire Country season finale, Friday, 9, 8 central on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
All right, and we're back. Thanks for waiting. So, Steve, I was kind of thinking about it yesterday, reading some of the message board, and you know, it wasn't a flawless game. It was pretty darn close, but I think you mentioned three field goals inside the 10. Michigan really among the highest, most red zone field goals in the country at this point. So that's one area to improve. You know, the passing game was quiet. It wasn't zero touchdowns, what, 155 yards passing. So I kind of joked in my writing, it was Penn State's job to make Michigan pass by doing literally anything to stop the run. And they didn't. 145 yards passing, excuse me. So I'm not particularly concerned about either, because the score is the score. But I do think there were some plays, there were some decisions, and there were some yards, and there were some points left on the field where Michigan really could have hit, I guess, full speed. I don't think it will be a concern for the next month. But I think with Michigan being ranked in the top four or top five, I think Michigan fans can start to look at some of the concerns like an Alabama fan base would. Because Alabama, I mean, they had issues with penalties. They had issues with special teams. The offense wasn't really, it seemed to be putting too much on Bryce Young. There were some defensive coverage issues before Saturday. And then they lose, right? So it's like when you play the top five team or top six team on the road, some of those little things you might be concerned about can become big things. Anything jump out to you, Steve, in terms of what Michigan entering this bye week, probably going to be favored by double digits for the next four games, you know, until they play Ohio State. But anything jump out to you as, hey, Michigan might want to correct this or work on this or iron this out with this extra week of practice?
I mean, the biggest thing to me, you know, I don't know, maybe they don't believe it's a high percentage play. I don't know why they're not at least throwing a couple fades up in the end zone, you know, whether it's Anthony, even Cornelius Johnson, even Ronnie Bell, I guess, if the matchup is right. You know, things have felt a little compact in the red zone for them. And to me, it's of course you want to run the plays that work, but I think even having a guy split out and running a couple fades in the corner will at least have to make the back seven or back four at least like watch for it, you know. And it's so, you know, yeah, I mean, if there's one major criticism or mid-level criticism, I think it's just things feel a little too compact in the red zone. And Michigan has enough weapons at receiver and tight end where I think there should be a little bit more. I don't want to say creativity, because I don't, you know, but just more of a variety, you know, because it's that was one thing. Yeah, they could have put up 63.
It feels like teams are sniffing out some of those run plays
a little bit. Yeah. And it feels like, you know, that's a game that they could have put up 63 points yesterday, you know, if they had any red zone success. So yeah, I guess that's probably the biggest thing that stands out to me. Would be interested to go back and watch, as you said, like Penn State's running backs didn't do anything in the run game or the passing game, and Penn State's tight ends made little to no impact yesterday too. So interested to see on rewatch how the linebackers looked, you know, because that's been the one real big thing defensively we've been kind of waiting for, is a team going to exploit what has appeared to be an inconsistent level of play in pass coverage from those linebackers. So that's the other thing, but yeah, really offensively to me, it's just, yeah. And I agree. I think that's a great point I think it's the point now where, yeah, you can be a little more, we can put the magnifying glass up a little bit closer, because I think, yeah, the expectations on a week to week basis for Michigan should be higher at this point. So you can be a little bit nitpicky, because, you know, this is a team that now is fully controls their destiny to go back to the playoffs again and win another Big Ten championship. So, yeah, I mean, to me, though, red zone for sure, particularly in the passing game. And honestly, I guess, and it feels like I can complain about this every week. I just think they need to find Andrell Anthony a little bit more than they do, period. I understand they're talented enough across the board where, you know, I don't think, outside, I guess Bell is probably the guy, and maybe Wilson when he's 100%. But, you know, you're not going to have a guy that's getting eight or nine grabs every game. But I just think that he even gives them something a little bit different than those three guys give them. And, you know, just they haven't really pushed for him much in the passing game so far. So again, that's more of a really kind of grasping at straws type thing, but still just would maybe like to see him utilized a little bit more in the passing game.
I think that's fair. I mean, I'd have to look at the numbers. He has 6 receptions this year. He had 12 last season. Yeah, I mean, he has 18 receptions, and against Michigan State last year, he had 6 of them in his career. He had 155 yards in that game. In his career, he has 321. So just under half of his overall production came just against, you know, his hometown team, which was valuable for Michigan at the time. But yeah, you are. I am curious to see. I mean, this was someone who coaches, players, insider sources were really pushing him as kind of this next great Michigan receiver. And I don't think that is necessarily wrong, because he's off to a quiet start this season. But when you hear about how comfortable JJ, you know, all the practices him and Donovan Edwards and Andrell Anthony did together when they were freshmen, kind of behind the scenes, you almost wonder if, is this someone that could help McCarthy's deep ball passing game develop, if they can get him involved on either some fades or some posts, or just finding it, giving him a chance to create separation and make contested catches downfield. Cause that's probably his biggest strength right now. I think he's a pretty versatile athlete, but I think he's probably Michigan's next great deep ball threat, you know, if he continues on his trajectory. So maybe he's an answer to some of those red zone issues or some of those deep ball passing issues. And then the other thing with the red zone, if they don't want to do the fades, I think that's fine. I think they can live with that. But we saw last season toward the end of the year, the red zone efficiency really picked up. This was really how Jake Moody won the Luke Groza Award last year, was a lot of red zone stalls. So he ended up just knocking, kind of like yesterday, just automatic field goals in the red zone, helping pad his stats. And then you saw toward the end of the season, they didn't really need him anymore because the red zone was working. And I felt like last season, a lot of it, Hassan Haskins helps, no doubt. But I think back to like against Ohio State when they had AJ Henning take that carry kind of around the outside. I mean, they have speed and a multitude of athletes that they can put a lot of guys in motion or in the backfield, kind of have them work around the field and just see what's sticking in an opponent's defense. You know, it doesn't have to be fades, but I do think you have to, if you're not going to do fades, if you're not going to, you know, try to chuck it in there in the very corner of the end zone, I do think Michigan's too talented to just kind of do run, incomplete pass, kick a field goal in the red zone. You know, they have players that can make plays in the backfield. They have players that can make plays in the flats, in the screen game. I think you saw against Indiana that actually did help them toward the end of the game. They had a couple of red zone screens that I think both of them scored touchdowns. So it's there. I'm not overly concerned about it just because I think that it's a long season. They're going to have an opportunity to try things out. But I do think that's something I'll probably keep watching every week. I think that was my takeaway. I'm keeping an eye on it. I'm not concerned about it for Michigan, but I am kind of circling it and putting it under the magnifying glass, so to speak, because at some point, whether it's Ohio State or a postseason game, perhaps a championship game, if they get stalled 3 times in the red zone in the first half, the other team might take a bigger lead than 1 point, and they might have more ammunition on their roster to hold on to a lead or really take a lead. Or maybe you have 2 bad bounces that go against you. So it's something to keep an eye on, I think. Last question for you, Steve. I guess a little bit of your just final overall thoughts, but I couldn't help but notice in the press conference, I felt like that was a very good example. I would encourage fans to go either read our quotes over at the MichiganInsider.com, Michigan247sports.com. I think MGO Blue provides full video. We're only allowed to do a couple minutes of video each time. But boy, this team really seems to have that culture down. And culture is a very overused term in sports, so I'll define it here. I think this team plays and wins and works the Jim Harbaugh way. Everything I've gotten to know about Jim Harbaugh and his time coaching Michigan, you know, this is someone who he needs people who really love the grind of football. They love the work. They love the contact. They love the physicality. They love kind of the thankless approach. I mean, if you think about it, football has a higher practice to game ratio than just about any sport. Not, it's higher than baseball, who might play three or four games in a weekend. It's higher than basketball, who play three games a week. I mean, it really is hard practice, hard practice, hard practice, walk through, and then you get your game. And so I think Jim Harbaugh, he needs, because I think he's a pretty, he's a coach with high expectations and high demand for what you're doing in practice and in the off season. And so I think he's always needed a team that really loves the work leading up to the game as much as the actual game themselves. And that press conference yesterday, that really shined through for me. You know, hearing them immediately talk about Michigan State, and I get that it's a rivalry game and you know, they're hungry for revenge and all that, but I think that's true in other situations too. I don't think this is a team that's looking forward to kicking it back for a few days for the bye week. You know, this feels like a team that's as locked in, if not more locked in than last season's team from a showing it in practice and then showing it in game standpoint. I think there, and then the other thing, I think there's just so much positivity. And I think JJ McCarthy has a lot to do with that. But I think Blake Corum does too. You know, he's a very smiley, positive guy. You know, I think Mazi Smith, Junior Colson, you could probably keep going down the list. You know, this is, they're very serious about their work, but they also enjoy it and have a positive spin on it that makes it fun, right? And that's the best kind of football team, a team that has found a way to make the hard work fun, that wants to work hard as much as they want to win football games. So I don't know if that's a final thought for me or a takeaway. I don't know what the question would be for you, but that's something that really jumped out to me. That was kind of my post-game column is, you know, this is a team with a lot of talent, but they also have this love for physicality, this love for the work. You know, I think Jim Harbaugh said they do it with gusto. They look forward to playing football every single day. And most teams have that to some degree, but I think there is a different level when you're talking about the mid-season Tuesday practice where no one feels 100%, but it doesn't feel like this team lets that deter them or dampen their spirits. It does feel like a team that really wants to work every single day. And even when they win, they're not relishing in the moment. They kind of are a little bit, but they're already thinking about Michigan State. And you know, after they play Michigan State, whatever the result is, they're already going to be thinking about the next month and the opportunity that they have later on in the season. So that's something that really jumped out to me. I you know, press conferences are, you don't always get a takeaway. You don't always learn a ton, especially in today's media climate, I suppose. But I came away as sold as I've ever been on the culture that Jim Harbaugh's built and the players that really embrace his style and his mindset of attacking a football season, not just the 12 games, the off season, and the stuff in between as well. Steve, any final thoughts for you from Michigan's win?
So I don't know when we'll be recording the recruiting podcast, probably Wednesday. For me, I mean, that. I guess I'm thinking like this has got to start paying off for Michigan on the recruiting trail a little bit. This was really their first big home game. Could not have been more impressive. And it really is kind of getting to the point where, like, if you're an offensive lineman, a tight end, a running back, a D end, maybe even a corner, Michigan should really be getting a strong look from most of the prospects at those positions in the country. I mean, there's really no reason not to consider, you know, just with the production, the usage at those positions, the success that all those positions are having. So my takeaway from this game, I'm just kind of curious to see if this really kind of gets things jump-started on the recruiting trail. It's been another little bit of a lull. Not totally unexpected because of the week home schedule to begin. I mean, it's really hard to have big recruiting weekends against, you know, like Colorado State and Hawaii and stuff. So, you know, that's really my kind of takeaway here. Yeah, I agree with Zach on the culture stuff. I think it's clear. really has a very not like just from the way the players talk, the way they kind of is, it has a very NFL feel to it, like a business feel to everything. And I mean that like in a positive way, where it's like, you know, yeah, like these guys are treating it like a job almost. And, you know, that's not always, that's not a culture, that's not a foundation that's, I think, is easy to build in today's college football, where everybody seems to be eyes are on the same goal, you know, as a team, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, no, really impressive for Michigan. They will be favored by double digits, I assume, the next four games. You know, much needed bye week, I think. That's what, seven games in a row, the bye week, I think, comes at the right time for them before Michigan State. And then, yeah, good game.
It was interesting talking to Alejandro yesterday on our way back to from the press conference to the press box, because, you know, I was kind of thinking about recruiting. I'm not someone who covers recruiting, and I'm, you know, certainly let Steve and Sam and Bryce and our national team at 24/7 Sports do the heavy lifting on that front. But I was kind of like, if a recruit isn't interested in Michigan right now, what's the reason? Like, what's missing? And the only things I could think of were playing time and NIL deals. And in my head, I'm kind of like, well, if a recruit's choosing based on those two things, because Michigan's developing NFL players, they're winning football games, they're clearly getting guys exposure, you know, nationally, making, you know, Blake Corum's a national name, J.J. McCarthy's a national name, Ronnie Bell is too, a lot of guys in the defense are as well. You know, scouts are watching, the wins are happening. You almost, like, if someone's not interested in Michigan, Michigan can almost to this point say, okay, fine. You know, like, if you see all this and you want to go where there's more playing time, where there's more money, I you know, this is just my non, like, kind of outsider recruiting opinion. I almost think Michigan could let those guys go. I mean, obviously you don't, if you're an assistant, you're recruiting hard, but there is some element of, boy, if you're still not interested, this just might not, it might just not be the program for you.
Yeah, I think they kind of do that to an extent. I think there's a balance, but yeah, I definitely, you know, there are guys that they will,
like,
back
what more
off
could of. You really want from a program?
Yeah, I agree.
Other than money and playing time, I guess.
And you know, yeah, it's fascinating. You know, you wondered with all the NIL stuff. I always kind of wondered if this, the culture, you see what's like happening with Texas A&M. You know, and I don't know if it was just speaking in generalities, but I remember Herb Street saying, you know, they don't really seem like they're all in it together, or they're all on the same page. And like, of course, so naturally, that's the first thing you think of as well. This is the school where these guys all reportedly got these huge NIL deals and stuff. You know, so I just wonder, yeah, I think there is a balance. You know, I think Michigan definitely, there's a type of guy that they prefer, you know, but yeah, it's a balance between finding that type of guy, but you also have to accumulate legitimate talent too. So, you know, I think this will be the game. I think I wrote this like Monday or Tuesday last week, is now I think you're still, just a little tidbit here, we'll start to see Michigan more involved with some guys committed elsewhere. Notre Dame lost again yesterday, Stanford's first FBS win in over a year. At home, it was in South Bend too. Marcus Freeman's what, 3-4 now as a head coach. Gotta think Michigan might be making some phone calls there. You know, other programs, I'm sure, but either way. So yeah, I mean, I think recruiting will start to pick up here. Michigan State will be another huge recruiting weekend. I think they'll use the bye week to go out, see some top guys, work harder on getting some other guys up for that Michigan State game, and then impressing again heading down the final stretch.
Yeah. Michigan's in the fun zone right now. They're 19-2 in the last two seasons. They went, if over a course of 43 years from 1977 to 2020, they had just four starts to the season of 7-0. Now they've done it 2 years in a row. And so I I'm sure there will be at some point, you know, a loss or a tough defeat, but not for at least 2 weeks, right? And so Michigan fans, I guess I try not to tell you guys what to do or what to think, but maybe don't overthink. I mean, the team's good, and they looked really good. They beat a top 10 team. Atmosphere was great. I mean, it's kind of what Michigan fans dreamed about when Jim Harbaugh got hired, right? It's not just returning to consistently good, but getting to that level of great where you're in the national title conversation year in and year out and having fun doing it. For Steve Lorenz, I'm Zach Shaw. This has been the Wolverine 24/7 podcast. Be sure to check out all of our stuff over at the MichiganInsider.com, Michigan.247sports.com. We got takeaways, grades, columns, articles from the press conference, and obviously we'll have we'll zoom out a little bit during the bye week with some big picture stuff as well. This has been the Wolverine 24/7 podcast. We'll see you next time.
It was a very bright, shining light, Sarajevo, and they needed to kill that light.
From producers Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, explore how art and music sustained hope during the siege of Sarajevo, thanks in part to humanitarians and the band U2.
U2, they represent a personification of our resistance.
The Hollywood Reporter hails Kiss the Future, moving and inspirational.
Kiss the Future! Viva Sarajevo!
Kiss the Future, new documentary now streaming exclusively on Paramount+. Go to Paramount+ to try it free. Terms apply.